This chapter moves very slowly through a day in the life of Ruth and Naomi. Sometimes it moves so slowly that, to me, it seems repetitive even. I'm thinking of something like verse 19. Her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked, and said, "The name of the man with whom I worked today is Boaz." We get the full story, all the details, in this day in Ruth's life. And this slow movement means that we get an up-close and personal glimpse into their world and into their everyday life. We get a glimpse of the culture of ancient Israel, of what it meant to be a man or a woman in that culture, of what it meant to be a foreigner, or to be poor, or to be a widow. The slow pace of this story lingers over the details. It paints us a detailed picture of a day in the life of Ruth and Naomi. We learn about the custom of gleaning in ancient Israel. In Leviticus 19, God commands Israel, "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. You shall not strip your vineyard bare or gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the alien. I am the Lord your God." And in Ruth 2, we see this commandment lived out in actual practice. Ruth and Naomi were poor, and Ruth was an alien. Boaz, a faithful Israelite, did not carefully harvest all the grain from his fields, but he left a few extras around the edges. People like Ruth and Naomi, who couldn't afford to own their own fields, could get the food they needed from Boaz's field. And this was a way of doing justice in that community. We learn about the different roles of men and women in ancient Israel. Boaz tells Ruth to glean close to the women and to ask for water from the men. And Naomi echoes this advice later. And when Boaz asks his servant about Ruth, his first question about her is, "To whom does this young woman belong?" He wasn't being strange by asking this question. Women belonged in that day to their fathers or their husbands or their sons. Women like Ruth, who did not have these men in her life, relied on things like working in the field, working hard in the field, or seeking the help of distant relatives, like Boaz. Ruth, as a woman, is in a vulnerable place in this story. As a poor person and as a foreigner from Moab, she's even more vulnerable. She shows courage by going to the fields and taking care of herself and Naomi. This chapter moves slowly and deliberately. This slow pace also tells us that this is not a story about grand military victories or about the order of the cosmos or even about a full biography of Ruth and Naomi. This is a story about the everyday, about the ordinary. It's a detailed description, not of the whole nation of Israel, but of the efforts of one woman on one day to find some food. This may tempt us to pass the story by. Where's the thunder and the lightning? Where are the inspirational words about God's plan for humankind? But another thing that the slow pace of this story tells us is that we should pay attention to this ordinary story. Instead of passing it by and reading it quickly, we should pay close attention to the fact that it is ordinary. Why is a whole chapter of the Hebrew and Christian scriptures taken up by this description of Ruth going to the field? What is so special about the ordinary? Doesn't the fact that it's ordinary mean that it's not special? For some reason, though, this story is a special story. We're invited to explore this ordinary day and discover a holy God at work as a strange woman goes to a strange field to pick up leftover grain. There are a couple of little turns of phrase that we read in Ruth 2 that give us hints about what else is going on in this very ordinary, run-of-the-mill story. One of them is in verse 3. We've already gotten the hint that Boaz is a prominent rich man, wealthy and honorable. We've gotten the hint that he's a distant relative of Naomi. In verse 3, Ruth goes to glean in a field, any field that she could find. The text says, "As it happened, she came to the part of the field belonging to Boaz." As it happened. This is a way for the author to say, what a strange coincidence that Ruth ended up in the field of this man who had the wealth and generosity to help her. And to say all of that with a wink. It's like if you wanted to meet up with someone you were romantically interested in. You might go to that person's favorite haunt on purpose. And then when you saw the person, as you knew you would, you might say, "Oh, fancy meeting you here." It's no coincidence. In Ruth's case, she did not meet up with Boaz on purpose. Not her purpose, anyway. Their meeting was somehow orchestrated. And we get a little hint of that in verse 3. As it happened. The other hint is in verse 20. Boaz has already shown great kindness and generosity to Ruth and Naomi. The two women are talking about this. And verse 20 says, "Then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, 'Blessed be he by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead.'" Blessed be he by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. The first part of what Naomi says is pretty clear. Blessed be he by the Lord. She's praying that Boaz would be blessed by the Lord. But the second part of that sentence isn't so clear. Whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead? The living are Ruth and Naomi, and the dead are their deceased husbands. Whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead? The part that's not clear is whose kindness? Who is whose? It could be that Naomi is talking about Boaz's kindness. And it could be that Naomi is talking about the Lord's kindness. Blessed be he by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. It could also be that Naomi is talking about Boaz and the Lord in the same sentence. Whether it's through coincidence or through the lives of faithful people, God's fingerprints are on this ordinary story about Ruth and Naomi. God made sure that Ruth found her way to the field of Boaz. God worked in what could seem like a coincidence or an accident. God also worked his faithfulness through the faithfulness of the human characters in the story. Their faithfulness was a response to the faithfulness they first received from God. And then their faithfulness was a channel for God's faithfulness. Through each character, God's faithfulness flows to another character in the story. At first, I kind of wanted to divide this up into different acts. Act 1, God gives his love to Ruth. Act 2, Ruth gives her love to Naomi. Act 3, God gives love to Boaz, who in turn gives it to Ruth. But it's not so linear as that. It seems more like God's love is just tied up in the whole mess. One way that God is involved is summed up in an old Latin hymn, which the church sings on Maundy Thursday often. And it's called, "Where Charity and Love Are, God Is There." Where charity and love are, God is there. Wherever and whenever God's people love each other, God's love is present. Whatever love we have to offer comes from God. When Ruth loves Naomi, it is the love of God that she gives. When Boaz is kind and generous to Ruth, it's the kindness and generosity of God that he gives. Each person as an individual is a channel of God's love in this story. Each person as an individual has been transformed by God's love and lives out of that love. Another way that God is involved is by loving the whole community. Yes, Ruth loves Naomi just as one person loves another. But Ruth, Naomi, and Boaz also love each other as members of a larger community. In their case, they're bound together as family. They're related. But even if they weren't so closely related, they would be bound together as children of God. Each person gives what she or he has to offer. Alone, each of them couldn't make it. But by following God's commands, the community as a whole can care for its members. Ruth, who's poor and has no material wealth to offer, can love Naomi by promising to never leave her, as we heard about in chapter 1. Boaz, who has fields and servants, can be generous with the grain in his fields. Naomi can offer the wisdom that she has from her many years of life. Each person faces limitations alone, but God brings them together in a way that works for the good of the whole community. This story of loving community in Ruth 2 can be a parable of the way that God loves us, and it can also be a lesson of how God would have us love each other. The Hebrew word for faithfulness from God and among the community is hesed. The word hesed, only you pronounce it with a little more of that back-of-the-throat sound that's in Hebrew that I can't quite pull off. Hesed. The word shows up all the time in the Old Testament. You may have heard it before. And it means love, steadfast love, faithfulness, loving kindness. It shows up all the time in the Old Testament because it's what the story is about. God shows hesed to his people and commands his people to show hesed to each other, faithfulness. In Ruth, we have a little example of what this looks like. God still calls his covenant people to hesed today. God still gives us his faithfulness and then calls us to be faithful people. God has shown us the extent of his faithfulness on the cross. Our faithfulness now is to be cross-shaped. It should look like the sacrificial love of Jesus on the cross. Already in the book of Ruth, we get a glimpse of this cross-shaped faithfulness. Ruth sacrificed her independence to stay with Naomi. Ruth sacrificed her comfort and safety to go to the field and glean. Boaz sacrificed some of his crops and his convenience to be generous to Ruth and Naomi. Now, to be faithful people today, of course, will not look exactly like it looked for Ruth and Naomi and Boaz. We've learned about what a different world they had from our own. But the bravery of Ruth, the wisdom of Naomi, and the generosity of Boaz are values of faithful people that we can imitate today. In our culture, we don't care for the poor by leaving grain along the edges of our fields. But do we encourage government programs to care for the poor? Do we encourage church and community programs to care for the poor? Yesterday, a group of folks from Church of the Servant did what they do twice a month. They sorted and distributed food from a truck sent by Feeding America. Many of you contribute money to pay for this truck, or for the food in this truck. Feeding America gets us a great deal on the food, so we can feed hundreds of people with just one truck. I like what Feeding America was called before it changed its name, which was Second Harvest Gleaners. In our culture, women and foreigners don't face the same obstacles that Ruth faced as a Moabite and as a woman. So the kindnesses that Boaz showed her might not mean much in our culture. But those same groups, women and foreigners, are still marginalized today in the 21st century. How is God working through those who have more power, the way he worked through Boaz? How is God working through those without power, like Ruth? This story invites us to look for the faithfulness of God in the ordinary, in the faithfulness of people in our world today, too. This chapter moves very slowly through a day in the life of Ruth and Naomi. It moves very slowly from Ruth 1 to Ruth 3. Chapter 1 ended with Naomi weeping and telling her friends to call her bitter instead of her name, Naomi, which means sweet. Chapter 1 ended in tragedy. Chapters 3 and 4, which we'll get to explore together over the next few weeks, describe Ruth and Naomi's progress towards happiness again. Chapter 2 is that daily in-between time. It's when Ruth finds sustenance from the fields, but she hasn't found a new family yet. It's when Naomi finds a long-lost relative, but she hasn't found a grandchild yet. It's when Boaz finds a hard-working young woman in the fields, but he hasn't found a wife yet. This daily in-between time between the tragedy of chapter 1 and the complete happiness, or the completing happiness of chapters 3 and 4, it's similar to our lives. We have already received the salvation and love of Jesus. We have known the chesed, the faithfulness of God in our lives. But we're still struggling with the everyday, waiting for God's complete redemption. What God gives us in this day to day is his faithfulness, his never letting go, his not forsaking us. God gives us his own day-to-day, ordinary faithfulness. It may come by coincidence. It may come through other people or through the community. This faithfulness of God is our hope and our foundation as we wait for that better future. This faithfulness seeps into our whole selves. This faithfulness becomes a part of who we are and what we offer to our own neighbors and our own communities. This faithfulness flows through us and to us, a gracious gift from the God who will never forsake us. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.